whether all the parties necessarily must be represented in the Chief Whip's forum. In terms of the strict application of the rules currently, the rules do not provide for that. If you look at sub point D here, it speaks of the most senior whip of each of the other parties represented in the NA. Now, not all the parties represented in the NA have whips. This is subject to me checking it, but I think it goes up to the FF Plus, but I can check in terms of who has a whip. But the other parties are grouped together, and they have, I think, two, if not three whips representing them. So if you were to go with the rule as it stands currently, it will only be those whips who attend the Chief Whips Forum. However, in terms of practice, even when we send out memos to the Chief Whips Forum, we say Chief Whips Forum, Chief Whips and party representatives, because we recognize that some of the people who sit in the Chief Whips Forum are not, one, are not Chief Whips, two, are not whips. In fact, Chair, I might just said add that if you were to look at the strict understanding of the title Chief Whip, there are, in terms of the law, there are basically two Chief Whips that are recognized. It's the Chief of the Majority Party and the Chief Whip of the Opposition, and I think the Deputy Chief Whip, but it's those two Chief Whips. So the issue really is, should we have all the parties represented, or should this rule be applied as it stands currently? And the second point is, should we have alternate members? When a member is not there, the full member is not there, should you have an alternate member? And thirdly, if it says a most senior whip, or it says a member from each party, should it then be acceptable that you could have three members from the same party or two members from the same party attending at the same time? So those are the issues that need to be clarified. And lastly, when it comes to portfolio committees, any member can attend any meeting and they can participate but not vote, as the chairperson determines. However, this is a closed meeting. It's unlike your typical committees of parliament. It's a closed meeting, and the rules, and the by virtue of it being closed, it means that some of the issues are confidential in nature and are supposed to be kept within the parameters of the whippery of the House. So, Chair, we are raising these issues for your consideration. I might just perhaps suggest that the committee might consider requesting Honourable Mazone to table the proposal in writing, that is, if it was not properly understood by all the members, so that you can have it in writing and understand the proposal, because the proposal does extend this rule. It speaks to the councillors, to the president and deputy president, who are not necessarily covered by the rule, but who attend nonetheless. So I think that proposal, in a sense, affirms current practice. Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Paso, for clarifying that and also for presenting to us what the rule says. So I will now open this matter for discussion. Honorable members, I see. Honorable Janji, may you please come in? The platform is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Just to appreciate the brief input by Mr. Castle, but also to connect with the proposal of Ms. Mazone, who says in the chat group, she sent whatever that she was presenting here in 2019. That's fine. I have no problem with that. I'm sure you don't have a problem, Member Mazone, repeating, pressing that button again and send it. But where I want to start, Chair, I just want to start before I get to the meat of it. On the issue that Mr. Claso raised, to say the issue of alternates. I think the rule, rules as it stands, rule 257.4 of that says rule 156 does not apply to this forum. And rule 156 is about all tenants. And I would want us to keep it in that manner. I think let me start, Chair, by also echoing that the Chief Whips Forum is a coordinating body, consensus body, as Ms. Mazzoni puts it, which in my own view, it should be about building relations within that space amongst the parties. So it's important to emphasize that point. It is not a decision-making body. But I want to say this up front because I'm going to be making this point later, that whilst it is consensus in its nature, the kind of consensus outcome that gets out of that sometimes has the effect of influencing decision-making. I want to repeat that point. That consensus sometimes has the influence to, or the effect to influence decision making. So a Chief Whips Forum would meet and agree the House is not meeting. That is that consensus body, but they all agreed on that. And that decision would affect parties that are not part of that. So there is that thin line that in its designation, its consensus, in its designation, it is merely coordinating, but some of its effect and impact it can get into producing that kind of a decision to some extent that can be binding. But let me not get in deeper into that because that's a space you'll get when one day we'll get into a courtroom. I want to say, Chair, that I agree and support from the on behalf of the ANC the point one up to C. The House Chairperson, the Chief Whip, the Deputy Chief Whip, because it also says that a whip, I mean the Speaker, Deputy Speaker may attend and so on. But I do want to say I think it makes perfect sense what Honorable Mazzoni says, that the two councillors of the President and Deputy President, so that they don't just attend there and at some point somebody will say, no, the rules don't allow you to be here. I agree that we need to have that. I have no problem with the official opposition represented by the Chief Whip and the Deputy Chief Whip, because what that does is that we know who those people are. Because I also share that there's a problem with the chop and change for consistency and continuity. You can't have different faces. This meeting is somebody else. Because when you do that, you're going to be affecting issues of accountability. A party will not be able to account for, they say, I was not here in the last meeting. So I firmly support and agree this issue of continuity and consistency. I perhaps lastly, Chair, want to say instead of point D under subsection 1, where it says the most senior whip of each party, I think I would agree, having listened to Mr. Castle, that as Mr. Mazzoni was suggesting, that each other party that is in Parliament gets represented by a person who will be consistent, and if that person will be absent for reasons beyond his or her control, that there will be proper processes and procedures when the next person is delegated. As things stand, it seems to me that you've got other parties being represented by other parties, and I don't think that on any other day, if we're to go to court, we will win such a case. Parties that are in Parliament have won elections. They have a right to participate in the decision making process, even in a consensus building kind of forum. And I made this point earlier that it's consensus. People are there by invitation of the chief whip. So I would like us to change language and say other parties represented by this one person to make sure that nobody is left out of that, but attend to this unlimited number, attend to this chop and change so that we achieve continuity. Sorry for being long, I just wanted to make those points. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Is there another taker on this? Honorable Mazoni, is your hand up?
Thank you, DCW. I just wanted to say that I will absolutely resubmit my original submission. I understand that it's hard to believe, but it feels like 1 year of our lives has just been erased. So I most certainly will resubmit that with the greatest of pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there other takers on this, Honorable sure. Members?
Yes, Chairperson.
Honorable Ndlozi?
Yeah, thanks very much. I think that quite frankly, the problems that are highlighted by Honorable Mazon are not, in my view, problems of the rules. And they cannot, in my view, also be resolved through a rule. And as it stands, the composition, as far as I'm concerned, it is okay, with the exception of this matter of not making a provision for parties that don't have whips. I think it's fine to make that consideration, but it's not something that was of concern per se to her. It's something CASO raises. So I think that we can make that provision that the most senior whip or a member that a specific party will designate. The nature of the Chief Whip's forum requires of us to keep it, in my view, as it stands at the moment, with that exception. And there must just be agreement about consistency in relation to the whips that are there and the fact that they are the only ones that must come. And this matter of the alternate has, in most cases, had to do with the fact that sometimes certain whips cannot make it, you know, legitimately, and they send another whip so that a specific discussion can have a contribution from a specific party. And because the consensus building body, that flexibility must be left open. If you straight jacket it, you might lose the very ability of it being a consensus building body. So there must be that sort of understanding, and we mustn't be too, if you straight jacket, you're going to lose this function that it must play, which is to build consensus. Really, I think that House Chairpersons, the Chief Whip of the Majority Party, Deputy Chief Whip of the Majority Party, and the most senior whips of all other political parties is enough. I don't see any problem with the rule. And then if at some point in the meeting the DA brings another whip when the chief whip is not there, it must not be a crisis, because that person will be there to build consensus. That person will be there to make sure that the function of this whippery agreement happens. If it's not seen in that light, I don't know then why in the first place have a body that doesn't take in binding decisions, but is concerned with consensus building, and then loses the very flexibility to constitute that consensus. So in summary, I think the only amendment I'm persuaded by is with regards to all the other parties, just the provision on D, or we have a section on E that specifically allows all the parties that don't have whips to also find expression. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Kurenov.
Thank you, Deputy Chief Whip. Mine is just a point that was raised by Honorable Janky, and that is the representation of the other parties, the smaller parties, to have representation from the smaller parties onto the Chief Whip's forum. I'm talking to the parties who have only one member in Parliament. I remember, and I stand to be corrected, but during the issue of questions, the smaller parties do have an agreement that they can be represented by a member of a bigger party. I think in this case it was the IFP. So I'm just asking the question, just to be practical, there may be the very smaller parties really are stretched for time and space, and whether it'll be practical for them to avail themselves for every Chief Whip's meeting, whereas they can get the information if there's an agreement with their consensus to say, listen, we can't attend on a weekly basis, but we are very happy to have a representative, and they elect such a person to represent them. And after the Chief Whip's forum, that person gives the decisions or the recommendations of the Chief Whip's forum to all parties, so that everybody is all on the same page. I'm just raising this just from a practical situation. We can say all parties must be representative. That will be 13 parties. But from a practical point, it may be better that some of them from own voluntary decision to say, we are happy to be represented as long as we get the information of what are the recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kurenov. Honorable Lissouma.
Good morning, colleagues, and thank you very much, Honorable Chair. One will say that the Chief Whip's Forum has a reason why it's called a Chief Whip's Forum, and it's desirable that it must maintain that. Having said that, I would like, without repeating the points that have raised by Honorable Mazoni and Honorable Honorable Janki, to say that within the spirit of deepening the democracy, multi-party democracy, it will be a right thing to also to extend it to other parties. But also they must submit the names, who are those members who will be attending the Chief Whip's Forum. Secondly, Chair, a party B may opt to invite a whip who is not necessarily a chief whip or a deputy chief whip, but probably can be done that for a tactical reason, but also there is a reason for, let me use the scenario of committees, for committees to say parties, they must submit the names of those members. And the rationale behind that, from where I'm seated, Chair, is for the smooth running of that committee, but also consistency, but also the intellectual, and also continuity, as it were. If then at any given time the party, for whatever good reason, can chop and change the members, it will then lose the essence of being a chief whip's forum, as it were. But also it will also disturb, let's say for argument's sake, the chief whip's forum agrees that they defer a certain matter, but also they've tabled the reasons of in support or in not support of that matter, like probably rescheduling sittings of parliament. and then another whip who is not necessarily a chief whip or not from other political parties that it seems like were in agreement they may be extended to, then it will change the whole thing and delays the meeting. But I'm not saying that the time could be the factor, but the professionalization and continuity and saying that we acknowledge that we are taking this forum serious in terms of extending and influence each other at that level so that the issues when they come before the House, they at least have been a backroom that has processed them. In short, Chair, I will say that let's go along with the spirit of Honorable Mazoni and also amplified by Honorable Janji, and that will be the proper way and the professional way of good governance as it were, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for participating in this discussion. Indeed, a Chief Whip's Forum is a consultation forum. And also that as Chief Whip's Forum, we discuss matters there, we try to find consensus, and we go to the NAPC for a decision making. So it works smoothly if we are consistent. If we are consistent in attendance as the Chief Whip's Forum, there's nothing wrong with having alternates, but it cannot be that every day, every week, we have different alternates. Because when we discuss matters in that forum, trying to reach consensus, we expect parties, because on every Thursday, we do have our caucuses. We expect parties to consult and also to brief those who were not in the meeting so that they have a better understanding of what was discussed. And also when we go to the NAPC in the morning to take decisions on those matters, we expect that we will not be reopening the discussions to save time. We will go as per our discussions in the Chief Whip's Forum. But if we keep on chopping and changing alternates, that this week this will attend, then when we go to the NAPC, there's another one attending, the previous one was not there, the person who attended the Chief Whip's Forum is no longer there, and there was no briefing to the other members of the very same party who will be attending the NAPC. So that is where it becomes a problem. And also that on the following week, when we attend the Chief Whip's Forum, a new person will come. And that person will want to take us back to the very same discussions that we dealt with, and it was a decision was taken in the NAPC. So what we are pleading for is that as a multi-party democratic parliament, let's allow for other parties to be represented, because we know that we don't have the same political ideologies as parties in represented in parliament. So the message of the Chief Whip's Forum, if I may go back a little on what Honorable Kwarinoff was saying, he said that parties used to have two representatives. The smaller parties or other parties, if I may say so, used to have two representatives. But that also was very problematic, because they would come to the Chief Whip's Forum to say, Tina, we don't get information. And also sometimes when I want to convey a message to Honorable Hill Lewis and take it via Honorable Lisoma, that message, when it reaches Honorable Hill Lewis, it will no longer be the same. For the sake of participation, if we can tighten our rules and say that let's allow the other parties who have whips to be part of the Chief Whips Forum, because it's not that forum is not a decision-making body, to be part of the Chief Whips Forum, then when we go to the NAPC, we all are on the same page. Then those who do not have whips, they will then get information from whoever they choose to get the information from. But let's open that door to allow participation of everyone, like the rules allows members to, even if they are not part of a certain committee, to be part of that meeting. Honorable members, I don't think there's a strange mesh here. Only if we can allow those parties to be part of the meeting. But if, as the ANC, we have alternates, those alternates cannot attend if I'm part of the meeting. I don't know if I'm clear, because we want to avoid a situation where parties will be represented by three members in the Chief Whip's Forum at the same time, or four members. So if we have an alternate, then if the Chief Whip and myself are there, we cannot have an alternate attending. But if we are not there, if I'm not there, an alternate can attend if need be. But we are proposing that, honorable members, for the sake of our participatory and democratic parliament. Are we in one power? Honorable Mr. Kaso, can you please come into the fray?
I have followed the conversations. We'll obviously go through the record just to be clear that we've understood everything, but we get the gist of the conversation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. There was someone who was speaking before Mr. Kaso. Is it honorable?
I was being agreed, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we now move on to the next item? The fourth item on the agenda, which is consideration of a principle of ruling by Mr. Janji on the 29th of July 2020. Mr. Kaso, can you please take us through this particular item? Thank you very much.
Ma'am, I'm going to ask Perrin to speak to this. Perrin?
Good morning, Chair. Mr. Councillor, I can speak to it. Okay, I'd firstly just like to refer members again to the briefing document. I think it's on the screen, being shared on the screen now. So that really does provide a summary of the issue. As the Chair said, there was an incident in the House on the 29th of July when the temporary chairperson at the time, Mr. Janji, was presiding. It was a hybrid sitting that was dealing with the special adjustments budget, and they were going through the different votes in the schedule. During the proceedings, there were a number of interjections by one or two or three members, a few members, and then there were points of order raised on that basis, which asked the chair, the temporary chair, to please be strict in terms of managing the House and the interjections. At that point, a member, Ms. Mkilipi from the EFF, was heard to speak into the mic. And then Mr. Janji, on the basis of the points of order and the nature of the proceedings, asked that she be removed. That was from the virtual platform. And then Ms. Mkilipi wrote to the secretary and to address the complaint to the speaker, which she argued that the remarks were made when the bells were ringing, and therefore the House wasn't formally in session, so to speak, and also that her remarks were jovial in nature and not intended to show disrespect. So it was on that basis that the speaker then referred the matter to the subcommittee. Usually it would go through the rules committee and then the subcommittee, but for practical reasons it came here. And so to look at the principle, I would like to just alert members to Rule 92.12, which is about what allows members to aggrieved by a particular ruling to request the rules committee to look at the principle of the ruling. So Rule 92.12 prohibits the Rules Committee from reviewing the ruling itself, but to confine itself to the principle or the subject in which the ruling is based. I would also like to just, to, in conclusion, refer members, there was Hansard of the meeting of the proceedings, which was distributed as Annex B. We could, if needs be, show that. I'd just also like to clarify that this annexure was distributed on Tuesday, but then I think on Thursday there was a few updates that were made by Hansard, and then we distributed the updated Hansard, I think, on Thursday. So I hope all members received that. Thanks. I'm sure, Mr. Carson, maybe perhaps you could add. Thanks so much.
If I may just add, just in terms of process, I think it would enrich this discussion if the Honorable Mukalipi was allowed to state her point. I'm not sure if Perrin can indicate if she was invited to this meeting or not. And also the Honorable Bianchi, who would have ruled on the matter, to state his side of the story. And then subsequent to that, the committee then considers both versions. That can be done either orally, or the committee can ask for a written submission from the both parties, and so that you can have a complete picture of what went on the day. I'm trying to say the committee does not have to completely conclude this matter today if it does not have all the information, but it's really up to the committee to decide how it proceeds it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honor, Mr. Tasso and Mr. Hendrik. Honorable members, what's your take on what have been presented to us? I see by show of hands. Honorable Mazzoni.
Thank you very much, Deputy Chief Whip. Deputy Chief Whip, I am a firm believer in sticking to the rules of Parliament strictly. I myself have had to withdraw many a time, and I have done so when requested, even when I felt that it was unfair. I also have a general understanding with my caucus that when I inform them that they are to withdraw an item, they do so. Because whether or not we agree with the finding of the chairperson, there is a level of respect and a level of decorum that must always be maintained in the House. And when that is lost, then the institution becomes attacked rather than a political party or an individual. And that is something that we can never allow in a democratic parliament. So I would strongly urge us to go back to our caucuses and, as leaders of our caucuses, remind them that they don't only undermine the person at the chair or the person to whom their insult is intended to affect, but they undermine the integrity of the entire House when they do not adhere to the rules of Parliament. Now, the problem with the hybrid system is that many things are lost, including the ability to be sarcastic or the ability to portray humor or to portray nuance. And it's for that reason that we simply cannot expect someone sitting in the presiding, a presiding officer to understand the nuance or a perceived humor. And I think we must also agree that we all have different senses of humor. But the fact of the matter is, when you lose respect for the chair and Parliament becomes compromised, there must be a consequence for that. And it's a consequence that we all have to observe, and it's a consequence that we must all understand. So what I would like to see happening and what I would like to see us understanding is that our members must be held accountable for their actions. And as chief whips, it's the one part of our job that is not very particularly pleasant, and that is holding the line of discipline within our caucuses. And that line of discipline is very important. Now, the reason we have the Rules Committee and the Rules Subcommittee is because when a ruling is made that we are unhappy with, we have a body to which we can bring such unhappiness or such complaint. But certainly the floor of Parliament is not the place to do it. And I would therefore suggest that we we accept the ruling as was made, and that going forward as chief whips, we make sure that our caucuses are fully briefed in the fact that the hybrid platform does not allow for nuance, sarcasm, humor, and that the hybrid platform is a body on which we must ensure that the rules are adhered to even more strictly than they would be on the normal parliamentary floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mazzone. Is there another taker on this?
Yes, Honorable Chair, it's Lesoma.
Honorable Lesoma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. One, let me say up front that I will urge, as Honorable Mazzone has said, that let's accept the ruling as was made at the time with these two reasons, Chair. One, we must be, as members of Parliament, when we conduct our business, we are expected to be disciplined as much as possible. But also the other one is to hold the decorum of the House, which is very important. But also it does also probably, which is not necessarily the issue at hand now, is to say the presiding officers at any given time, they are expected to apply the rules as they are expected to do so, and to ensure that members, they behave in a manner that is acceptable to the rulings and the procedures of the House. I know sometimes we would like to joke, but we must also learn to say that House sittings are not the playground, but also we must make sure that we don't interrupt and refocus the sittings of the House. And for me, Chair, it's very important that we stick to the rules, and also the presiding officer on that day, he was correct to make that ruling, and it must carry on. And also, I hope other members also will learn the lessons. But I'm sure various political parties wish also to advise their members that they must make sure that they respect the House proceedings and obey the rules of the House. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lesoma. Is there another taker on this matter?
Yes, Chairperson.
Honorable Ndlozi?
Yes, thanks very much. Well, it seems to me that we've got to ask what we are being asked to do. A member has complained about a ruling, and the ruling and the facts have been referred to us. So the first question should be, how do we deal with this complaint, as Castle said? What do we do? Do we get a presentation and a letter of the member, give the member an opportunity to come and say what this complaint is about, listen to the other side or the person who is being complained about? That was the question. And unfortunately, Chairperson, I think you should have provided guidance at that stage, because it would beg the question as to whether in doing so, in our deliberations, for instance, the person they are complaining about is part of this committee. What does it mean that we are having this conversation with him? I don't see what the point. I mean, I would have thought that would have clarified all those things at first hand before we listen to the facts. What precisely is the procedure of entertaining this? Can get the manner in which you resolve justice. You shouldn't get the basic principles of procedural justice wrong. Makes your job difficult because the court of law will make a mockery of you. So I think we should do that. We should deal with this item as professionally as possible. Let us allow, as recommended, and Honorable Mukalipi to be invited, and then give an explanation, or we'll be given her letter, because part of the attachments did not include her letter. were given a summary of her letter, one of the two, and then request the house at the time to either respond to what Honorable Mukhalif is saying, writing, or as they said. And then we must make that decision before we proceed. And then on the basis of what they would have said, personally, I was not in the house at the time, so I don't know what occurred. Then we can discuss with the benefits of the fact and those oral presentations. Then we can then deliberate the principle we are being asked to deliberate on. I think that procedural question is a fair point of departure. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Lissouma?
No, just a quick one, Chair. I will suggest that we separate issues. Probably taking counsel from this one. But let's deal with this issue and be dealt with it. So that, because the other question that will come is that, is it for the first time where a member is not satisfied by the presiding officer ruling? And for me, where I'm seated, the answer will say no. So hence, I'm saying let's separate the issues. But also as a matter of principle, all of us, I don't hear anyone disputing that we must make sure that we conduct the business of the house professionally and uphold the decorum of the house. What Mr. Castle, the way I had him, it was a take home to say how do we, because if as the subcommittee of the rules committee, then we start being a hearing or sort of a where we're going to listen to both parties, what are we intending to do? On what basis we would be doing that? A member has written to properly following the proper channels, and a presiding officer also have responded. All of us, we have received the correspondence and we have gone through them and we have comprehended with understanding what is written there and what transpired. Fortunately, some of us who were, speaking for myself, I was in the house on that day. So I'm saying let's separate it. Hence, I didn't want to go to what Mr. Castle at the end to say, what do we want to do with it, but also dealing with the matter at hand. And moving forward then as a separate matter, what Honorable Dr. Andrews is raising, then we can deal with that one so that we deal it clinically, not to flout the issues. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lissouma. There's no harm in reflecting on this matter because as members of parliament, we are expected to be held accountable and also to maintain the decorum of the house. So we really appreciate if presiding officers invoke the rules and they are firm with them. So we want the rules to be applied without fear or favor, and also to make sure that as chief whips of parties, we also assist in running the house by making sure that our members behave in a manner that is acceptable and also respect the rules and the rulings of the presiding officers and also the rules of the house. So what's the use of us having rules if we don't respect them? We all know that if we are not satisfied with the rulings, like Honorable Mazoni said earlier, that sometimes she would withdraw even though she doesn't agree with the ruling for the sake of the smooth running of the house, then she knows the platform where to take this matter forward. So as this subcommittee, I think that yes, we reflected on this matter, but for a decision, we can take it back to the Rules Committee. But also, let's remember that the subcommittee is not an inquiry committee. It's a committee that processes matters that comes before it. Mr. Castle.
Thank you so much, ma'am.
Chair?
don't wish to belabor the point.
Let me allow the Castle first to speak. Thank you very much. Mr.
I don't wish to belabor the point except to say that on matters of this kind, there are basically two aspects. There is process and there is substance. How it's dealt with and what is dealt with. If I were to just go back to how the committee dealt with a similar matter previously, it was the chief whip of the opposition, the then chief of the opposition. There was an issue about references to court cases. My recollection is that he was asked to come and motivate his submission. Of course, he was a member of the subcommittee, so he spoke to his submission, his complaint. And there was also consideration of a report by the presiding officer who was in the chair. And on the basis of both sides of the story, the committee then dealt with the substance of the issue and reached a conclusion. So I'm just saying that just so that the committee is not sent back by the Rules Committee to consider the issues, the committee might want to consider whether, I'm told that Ms. Mukalibi was invited but did not come. It would have been useful if she was here so that she speaks and then the chairperson was in the chair that day, Honorable Gyangi, but it can also be done in another way through their written submission and the committee deals, concludes the matter. I'm just saying that I won't repeat this point, Chair. I think I'll leave it at this point, but this issue that the committee might want to consider, because this is not the last time that the committee will be dealing with this. It's important to establish process as we go along with this. Thank you, ma'am.
So, Mr. Castle, before you leave the platform, that's a discussion now, are you saying that both parties must be represented in this meeting, in the subcommittee meeting, where we will hear both sides of the story, then discuss the matter further?
I'm saying, ma'am, they are both versions. Both of their versions must be seen by the committee.
The subcommittee.
By the subcommittee, because the Rules Committee will ask you those questions. Did you listen to both sides? In other words, did you understand both sides? What motivated each of them? And I'm saying it does not have to be oral. The committee can say, please just, Ms. Kalipi, just motivate your issue, why you think you are right. And Honorable Gyangi, please just tell us the basis of the ruling. And remember, the issue is not to interrogate the ruling as such, but the principle underlying that ruling, whether
okay.
It was correct or not.
Okay. I hear you now. Thank you very much. Honorable Ndlozi?
Yeah, thanks. I think maybe that provides some sobriety. You see, we all have an interest, Comrade Chairperson, that there's all these things you're saying in relation to the conduct of members and so on and so forth. But you must not, and this is why there is a review, or there is a provision for review, you must not just assume that the decorum of the house and the order of the house, the efficiency of the house is only dependent on members. It's also dependent on chairpersons being fair, on presiding officers knowing the proper measure of rules of pressure, of punishment to apply. In fact, in many cases, the courts have expressed themselves that on the fairness of chairpersons of parliament. That's why you have a review process. That's why a person can say, okay, no problem. I then am going to come and complain about a conduct of a chairperson. Because chairpersons can be wrong. They are fallible. So the premise and the sentiment expressed here that we only in our attitude towards this complaint think about, yeah, members must just comply, members must know that the house is not a playground and all those things. That applies to presiding officers too. They ought to understand themselves that they're dealing with adults, they're dealing with human beings, and that they themselves are human beings and they're subject to to all types of mistakes, and that those mistakes, there's a process for those mistakes to be corrected so they themselves can improve in the ways in which they preside over the rest of us. So we are called upon in entertaining this to have that balance, to be fair, to consider this balance. Otherwise, we're a wrong committee if we're just going to not consider the fact that chairpersons or presiding officers can be fallible, and then listen to if indeed in the ways in which they ruled it was fair or not. We can't just proceed that they are fair either way. Even if they are not fair, we must just accept that is wrong. It's not befitting of the responsibility given to us today. On those basis, I request, because I had the honorable member that spoke, and I apologize.
It's Musoma,
I'm forgetting the name. Yes, Honorable Musoma. She said, that the submission of Honorable Lesoma. Can I proceed, Chairperson?
Yes, please, Honorable.
Hello?
Yes, Honorable Ndlozi, you may proceed.
Thanks. Okay, thanks. I'm saying that she indicated that in the attachments, we have the submission, a written submission from the presiding officer from that day. I don't have it. I've tried to go through the documents sent to us. I only have Hansard's and the speaker's referral. I don't have either Honorable Mkalipi's written submission or the presiding officer's submission on that day. Quite frankly, I don't have a problem with us having both submissions and dealing with them on the basis of submissions without the them coming for oral. But that will be on the condition that the presiding officer, who in this case is a member, does not deliberate, just for fairness, that is not recuses himself, as it were, when we speak to this issue, just for fairness, because he's definitely conflicted. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable Chair, the last one.
Thanks, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Soma, are you responding?
My apologies. Yes. But just a quick one so that we can move from this point. I said that we have, I thought that it was, now I've checked also, it's only that I was omitted in terms of the email groupings in terms of invite to this meeting. I've got it later. But I thought it was there. But nevertheless, now I can see that it wasn't there. So in the spirit of fairness, I would propose, Chair, one, that let it be from both parties' written submissions to us to clarify the issues and the sequence of events. But also agree that we are not going to be requesting them to make verbal presentation to the subcommittee, because which means each and every member that will not be happy then will be coming before this committee, which is not our responsibility. But also at a later stage, we must find a mechanism. How do we intend to process such issues if they come before the committee? Taking from what Mr. Castle has said, then that would be my take, Chair. Thank you very much.
Mr. Castle, your hand is up. Mr. Castle?
Apologies, ma'am. It's an old hand, as they say. I'm learning it.
It's an old hand. Thank you very much, Mr. Paso. Honorable members, thank you very much for deliberating on this matter. And Mr. Paso and your team, thanks for bringing it to our attention and also assisting us in clarifying the way forward on how to deal with it. As a subcommittee, I don't think we have a problem in attending to this matter, convening a meeting to deal with specifically with this matter. We can reconvene anytime soon, as and when the time allows us to do so, so that we can get both a representation, orally or written representation. I don't think we'll have a problem with it. Can we close this matter in that note? That we are open to that. We'll discuss with the with the NA staff table led by Mr. Castle to see when can we convene the subcommittee meeting so that we can have this deal with this item. And also, let's request those members, Honorable Ndlozi, that you are here. Please, if Honorable Mukalipi would want to make an oral representation, as and when we agree on a day and time of the meeting, she must avail herself. And also, we'll do the same with Honorable Janju, who was presiding on that very same day. Can we move on now, Honorable Members, to the next item on the agenda?
Chair.
Thank you very much. Now we are on time declaration of votes. Can you please take us through this matter, Honorable Kaso? We know that we have introduced in our rules that we have also many plenaries that will make sure that all parties and members debate issues in those mini plenaries so that we don't cloud the house with many debates, and also things will be processed in that other side of the house, which is the mini plenaries. When it comes for the house, it comes to the house for decisions. So already we have declarations, time allocated for declarations. If I may remind members, Mr. Kaso, if I'm correct, we started with maybe a 1 minute declarations for smaller parties, and also declarations takes longer because we have many parties represented in the house. So we came to an agreement that other smaller parties will have 3 minutes declarations. So now we have this item before us. What is it that you can present to us, Mr. Kaso? Then we'll take this discussion from there.
Thank you, ma'am. At the start of each parliament, there is usually a review of processes, parliamentary processes. And that includes time allocation and the sequencing of parties and rotations and all of that. Now, the declarations of vote time allocation was not reviewed at the start of the sixth parliament. We had the ANC time as 7 minutes, DA five, EFF 4, and all other parties 3. As you said, ma'am, before then, the times were even not like this. So there was then a proposal that in the sixth parliament that the times be consideration be reviewed in terms of the new strengths of parties, and that was circulated. But it never got to a point where the Rules Committee finally expressed itself on the matter. I do need to say, though, that the declarations of vote, as we have it at the moment, it's really tantamount to a debate in many respects. Because as you can see there, if all the parties participate, you then have 46 minutes. So if this time is increased, it's going to increase to 54 minutes, it becomes a mini debate. So a decision that needs to be taken by the committee and recommended to the main committee is whether you retain the times that you have, which have been working relatively well, in my view, or whether you want to change. We are just bringing this thing because it's our responsibility to raise this thing so that whatever the House does, it is aware of what is required of it to do. So, Chair, that is really what we are saying. We are not necessarily recommending those times. We are just saying if the times were to be changed, this is where they would be in the sixth parliament going forward. But you don't have to change the times. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Castro. Are they takers on this matter, honorable members? Honorable Janja?
No, thank you very much, Chair. Without wasting time, Chair, I've gone through this matter. The current time taken is 46 minutes, and if we were to change, it's 54 minutes. I think the issue I want to make, Chair, is that if it ain't broken, don't fix it. There's no reason for us to want to change. But up to so far, we feel it's working well. So I would want to suggest, Chair, and propose that we stick to the 46 minutes and the current arrangement that we have and not make any changes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Honorable Mazoni.
Thank you, Deputy Chief Whip. I'd like to agree. I think that we are a multi-party democracy, and I think that we need to be certain that in all our actions we make sure that we remain a pro-multi-party democracy. And I tend to agree with Honourable Yankees. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I would suggest that we stay with the way it currently stands.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I don't
see...
Honourable Ndlozi, what's happening with the
president? I'm having...
Honourable Janji, Honourable Ndlozi, may you please use that...
I apologise.
It's not working.
Yeah, I'm having... my apologies. I apologise profusely. I'm having difficulties. I've got this new laptop. I'm still trying to get the hang of it. So I apologise, but... the option of raising a hand, I've been trying to search for it. It's difficult. I'm sorry.
Okay, it's okay. You may proceed, Honorable Ndlozi.
No, thanks. I think, you know, the question of declarations shouldn't be treated. I mean, I should never be treated like another debate. I agree 100% with that sentiment. In fact, I thought that I could get all of us, instead of 46 minutes, to actually 40 minutes. As we think about Parliament as multi-party democracy and all those things, it's painful for a person to get 15 seats and then speak the same time as a person who's got one seat. And, you know, the rest of the people who are speaking most of the time here always have like a lot of seats. Imagine if we were to put you in the shoes, for an example, of IFP or FF Plus, and you speak the same amount of time. You've got 14 seats, but you speak the same amount of time with a person that's got one seat. I do think that 10 seats and above is a serious substantial number, even in terms of percentage allocation of votes. So if you're saying 10% and above, that's 2% of the votes and above. So the rest of the other members from ACDP going down, they're all less than 1% of the vote. But FF Plus is 2%. Yes, 3%. And then you are saying they must speak the same amount of time as people who got less than 1%. So that's the second point, which has to be considered in the global fairness of the allocation of time. So I want to argue that we stick to the 7 minutes of the ANC, 5 minutes of the DA, 4 EFF, 3 minutes for ISP and FF Plus, and then 2 minutes for the rest. It will bring us to 40 minutes. It's a declaration. It's not a debate. But I do think that if we work it like that, I mean, people will feel like, hey, I must work hard if I want more voice in Parliament. That's my submission. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Mazoni? Honorable Mazoni, your hand is up.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Chief Whip. Just a problem unmuting there. Honorable Deputy Chief Whip, the fact of the matter is this. If one does look at the fact that we don't allocate time fairly, as Dr. Ndlozi has proposed in his input, it would literally mean that, strictly speaking, some parties would enjoy 15 seconds. His party, strictly speaking, would probably enjoy about maybe 37 seconds. The DA would enjoy a minute, and then the ANC would have the bulk of the time. Now, that defeats exactly the purpose of a multi-party democracy. Now, whether we like it or not, even one-man parties received enough votes by people to be represented in the houses of our parliament. And we know that it is a physical impossibility to bring across a point succinctly in a short amount of time. We also know that it is very irregular that the smaller parties are able to invest themselves in each and every debate that happens in Parliament simply because they don't have the manpower or woman power to do so. So I'm really of the view, and believe you me, the DA could fight for a longer speaking time. And I'm also, of the view that I see the perceived unfairness of smaller parties having a large speaking time, even though they didn't earn the votes. But the fact of the matter is there were enough South Africans who deemed them important enough and representative enough of a segment of the population for them to enjoy a seat in Parliament. And therefore, if we truly are Democrats, and if we truly do believe in fostering and growing a democracy in our country, we must allow those represented in our parliament to be able to represent their constituents, whether we like it or not. And I think that is the mark of a true maturing and democracy that looks at the value of each and every voice of every constituent represented in the parliament of South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mazoni, and all the honorable members who participated in this item. Honorable members, indeed, we are a multi-party democracy, and our parliament is a multi-party parliament. So participation of all parties is very key. And of course, I want to agree with the sentiments that yes, it has worked for us and it's still working, even though we didn't review it this time around in the sixth parliament. So we keep it that way, the way we've been doing it. So we don't change or review anything, honorable members, to allow also the smaller parties to participate in this in parliament. So we are in agreement, honorable members, that we keep it the way it is. We don't change anything. Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we now move on to the next?
Sorry, Chair. Honorable Chair, before we move, I know you have made a summary. I would like to request that my different take be put on the record. I'd like it to be put on the record in this case. Thanks very much.
It's okay, Honorable Ndlozi. It will be captured as such. Thank you very much. Can we now move on to the next item? Discussions on questions to the Deputy President. Honorable members, we all know that the Deputy President work on delegated responsibilities by the President. So he is expected to make sure that he deliver on his responsibilities. He is the leader of government business, and also he participates in many activities that are delegated to him by the President. Can we take Honorable Mr. Handick, can you please flight to us for us those responsibilities?
Thank you, Chair. I think we are just waiting for my support to it's Annexure C. If we could just show that on the screen. Thanks.
Okay. Can you please take us through those? Mr. Handit?
Sorry, ma'am. I'm just waiting for the staff to assist in terms of putting on Annex C, which is the ATC. Could I also ask Mr. Plaikis, who's in the questions office, the head of the questions office, to maybe provide a little bit of introduction in terms of how our questions to the DP works and the designated functions. Thanks.
Mr. Plaikis, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Deputy Chief Whip.
Please come closer to your mic, sir. Closer to your mic.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Rule 159 basically provides for questions to the Deputy President to be taken or be scheduled by the program committee once
so you'll see them having to pick up
Honorable Hill Lewis, may you please mute your mic?
You're on your
own. Honorable Hill Lewis, please mute your mic. Thank you very much.
Sincere apologies.
Okay. Thank you very much. You may proceed, Honorable Mr. Blake.
Yeah, thank you, Madam. Deputy Chief Whip, Rule 159.1 basically provides for questions to be scheduled by the program committee once per month. Now, there was a letter of the EFF that intimated that the Deputy President's question should be not once per month, but once per quarter. Rule 159 also provides in 159.1b that the program committee must further determine which months qualify as months during session time within the annual program for purposes of this rule, which means for purposes of scheduling a question session to the Deputy President. Now, it is my opinion, Madam Deputy Chief Whip, that Rule 159.1b gives the program committee far greater flexibility on question times to the Deputy President than what Rule 140 gives in with regard to questions to the President. Because in terms of Rule 140, questions to the President must be scheduled once per quarter. But in terms of Rule 159.1, it must be scheduled once per month, but the program committee must determine the months which qualify as months for that purpose. And it is therefore my view, Madam Chair, that perhaps the committee should acknowledge the flexibility given to it by Rule 159.1b. And like all decisions are normally taken in the program committee by consensus which is usually first canvassed within the committee of the Chief Whip's forum, where parties discuss and find each other and say, because of the nature of the first quarter that is blocked up by the State of the Nation address, the debate on the State of the Nation address, the budget, etc., and the short period in April, March, that is usually taken up by urgent debates, legislation and so on, perhaps we should, consider that within the first 3 months that may not be advisable. Or then there would be other considerations like topicality, for example, the issue that the Deputy President will be leading the process of vaccination rollout, that may become an important consideration, and one may want to then decide on a question session within the first term or within April, March or February. So the rule I say 159.1b gives the program committee far greater flexibility The program committee may also decide that in terms of the annual session or annual program, the second term, which is normally a term that is impacted on by religious holidays like Easter, there may also be considerations because some of those months are very short and you can't always find a date that suits the program of the deputy president or that suits the program of parliament in order to slot in a question session. And so it is advisable that the program committee, therefore, have a consideration of which of the months the parties consider as qualifying months. And this is basically my submission in terms of the document that I have provided. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks, Mr. Plakis, on that one. Mr. Handik, are you ready before I take a member's hands?
Thank you, ma'am. I see it's coming back now. That day is an ATC, and Mr. Plakis will confirm that. That is the ATC in which Sir Donis, could you just scroll down a little bit? That is the ATC in which the current functions of the Deputy President, not that far, are articulated. So I just think the issue of now the functions of the Deputy President are designated by the President, but they can change. So the Deputy President can be given additional functions, or we can have functions removed. And that can change from month to month or year to year. Parliament is, however, informed when that does change for the purposes of questions to the Deputy President. Mr. Blakey's or Mr. Kass would like to add anything further, I think that's relatively clear. Thanks.
Mr. Kassel?
No, thank you, ma'am. I have nothing to add. Thank you.
Okay. That's the presentation, honorable members. I'll take Honorable Papo, followed by Honorable Mazzoni, in that order.
Good morning, colleagues. Since the letter was submitted on this matter, I think in 2019, the issue has been discussed several times, including with the Deputy President and the Chief Whip on terms of the implications. Mind you, there's also an additional task of the district development model and now the task of the vaccine circulation. That one probably will be ongoing until we have reached the required numbers of people to be vaccinated, which is at least 67%. We should not work on flexibility. The proposal that should be once every 3 months is actually very reasonable. As to which month the parliament will schedule that month when it's in session, that then can depend on the programming committee. So the amendment has to be clear and not flexible. It was suggested by the EFF, but we agree with that proposal. Because the responsibilities, the way things are, don't look to going to change. I think more are going to be added. And that's why, and if you look at the responsibilities, it requires a lot of engagement with people outside parliament, outside government. Initially, there was also that Sudan one, which is no longer a responsibility. Obviously, it was not listed. We should work on the basis of clear clarity that is once every quarter and that the determination then can be made by Parliament. If at some point Parliament feels that it should maybe come to once every 2 months, that determination can be made. But for now, I think the proposal actually is correct and should be reflected in the rules.
Thank you, Honorable Papo. Honorable Mazzoni?
Thank you, Deputy Chief Whip. Deputy Chief Whip, having participated in and following the Zondo Commission very carefully, I think the one take-home lesson that we have is that accountability and holding the executive to account is a very strong and very necessary responsibility that we as members of Parliament are duty-bound by our oath that we take as MPs to execute in all our decision-making. Now, the one thing that I do know is there's no such thing as over-accountability and over-examination of the executive. There is only a state that we could enter into where there is not enough oversight and enough accountability taking place. So I do agree that the Leader of Government Business has got a tremendous diary load that he deals with, and that from time to time things change. I do appreciate that Parliament is now informed as to how those particular changes affect the questions that may be answered. But in the execution of the Deputy President's duty, it must never be forgotten that first and foremost is the accountability that he has to the members of Parliament, because he is the leader of government business. And therefore, accountability and the oversight that is executed by the members of Parliament is of paramount importance. And it's not only of paramount importance for the safety of our constitution and of our democracy, but it is also a safeguard of the Deputy President, because then it can never be a case where the Deputy President is accused of not wanting to account or failing to account or attempting to withhold information from Parliament. So I agree that there must be a standard time given so that the Deputy President can make that time available in his diary. I know that conferences are planned far ahead of time, and that's why, I think it's imperative that both Honourable Quinnoff and Honourable Papo are present in the Chief Whip's forum, so that the diaries of both the President and the Deputy President are made known to the members of Parliament. But I do think that we should always err on the side of over-accountability and over-reporting to Parliament than under-accountability and under-reporting. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mazzoni. I don't know whether it's Honourable Member Mthokozi Sinxumalo, I don't know. But I see a hand here of Mthokozi Sinxumalo.
Yes, Chair.
Please include me as well, Chair.
Okay, I'll do, Honourable Ndlovu. I've seen your mic panya-panying here. Honourable Sinxumalo.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and good morning to the team and the honourable members. Chair, maybe because I do not have full background, but from what I read, from what has been submitted, it is a discussion around the Deputy President coming to Parliament for questions. Maybe the discussion is around whether he should or should not come to Parliament, and how often should he actually present himself before the House for accountability. Now, Chair, in all honesty and in any democratic dispensation, I don't think that there will be anyone holding public office but be in a position where they do not account. Yes, we do understand the fact that the responsibilities of the Deputy President are assigned by the President, etc. But those responsibilities must, because they touch in government, they touch on the oversight responsibilities of us as members to ensure that the smooth running of the country, and those responsibilities are executed as per the instruction and within the ombuds of the constitution of our country. So my submission would be that we continue holding and asking that the Deputy President present himself before Parliament, then we can maybe schedule through this forum the times as to when should he actually present himself before the House. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Nxumalo. My apologies to call you by your first name earlier. Honourable Ndlozi, may you please come in? Honourable Ndlozi?
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes. Am I audible, Chair?
Yes, you are.
Right. I think that maybe there is some philosophical misreading that other members are moving from. There is 100% agreement about accountability. Oral questions is one mechanism, and it is not the only mechanism. It is but one mechanism through which we hold the executive accountable at many and different levels. Oral questions. We are discussing one of the mechanisms through which Parliament exercises oversight, or at least in which we hold the executive accountable. So I think, quite frankly, there mustn't be any debate on the question of accountability. We are in agreement. Secondly, we want to have this oral question to be effective and efficient and not to be redundant, both in relation to substance, but also in relation to the frequency. So I don't see the wisdom in the over appearance, and that over appearance translating into over accountability. I'm not sure what both those terms in praxis mean. We must be able to substantially, we must be able to get substantial conversation on the oral question session with the Deputy President, with the President and other members of the... Remember, it's a mechanism in which it's not a written submission, it's an oral submission, so you are able to get an impromptu interrogation of whatever subject is in question. And for its efficiency, if it can be effective for the President on a quarterly basis, it should be effective for the Deputy President on a quarterly basis. That's the wisdom really here. You're having both these people who are assisting each other appearing twice in a term. So you have the presidency interrogated twice in a term, the president and then the deputy president on an oral basis, which gives you an opportunity for an impromptu interrogation. So that's really the case. I thought that in no way is that going against the spirit of holding them accountable. There's no proposal whatsoever that they must not come, or that the Deputy President must not appear or must not be held accountable. It is a point of departure which all of us move from. But you've got to be able to say, when they appear, these people, there's actually a matter of substance, so they must go and work. And work so much that when we do have a conversation with them, it's not redundant, it's not superficial. They are not answering us from a point of view of a common sense. We shouldn't be having a commonsensical conversation with them. It must be substantial, it must be deep, it must be coming from people who are really in charge of 50 to 60 million lives. It must not be commonsensical. And for that to be the case, it has to be properly ordered, and I think that this proposal really gives us that opportunity for a substantial conversation impromptu with them. Otherwise, the rest of the mechanisms remain through which we hold them accountable, or through which they report to Parliament, they are appearing, they are accountable, and so on and so forth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Janju.
No, thank you, Chair. I don't think we must waste any time on this item. There's nobody who's against the proposal from where I'm sitting. I think the contributions were all about enriching the issue of oversight, which we must accept. Sometimes we found lacking on that issue in quite a number of fronts. So I wouldn't want to elaborate further on this. I think Mr. Plachis has also indicated some of the things that must be worked out properly, because in essence, he is saying to us there are certain times in the parliamentary diary where it is difficult to do certain things. But I think we all agreeing here that if Parliament has got four terms, the Deputy President is going to appear not less than four times in a year, to deal with these three-hour questions, these six questions that we all are still supporting to be done, with the kind of substance and impact that Honorable Ndlozi is speaking about. So I would want to support, Chair, that we proceed to the next item as we are agreeing on this.
Thank you, Honorable Janji, but I still have two hands. Honorable Mazoni, is that an old hand or a new one?
It is an old hand, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Papo, your hand was up. Was it an old one or a new one?
I was saying that I was going to be given direction would have to come from the members themselves, but our view was that it should be once every quarter, and that should be determined by Parliament.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Indeed, no one is saying that we shouldn't hold the executive accountable. And while we agree on the accountability by the executive, we also want them to go and do their work so that when they come to Parliament, they give us an account of what they have done. So we are in agreement, Honorable Members, that the executive must be held accountable. So we also agree that the Honorable Deputy President will have to come to the House quarterly or four times a year, depending on the when the Parliament is in session. Thank you very much, Honorable Members, on that item. Can we now move on to opportunities for debate for smaller parties? Honorable Members, we have always, I'm sure, more than 3 weeks in the Chief Whip's Forum where smaller parties were complaining. I remember one Honorable Imam Shaikh, who's forever bringing this matter whenever he gets an opportunity, that they must be afforded an opportunity for debate, to debate their motions in Parliament. So with the current establishment that we have of rotating motions, what we can use in this regard would be to make sure that this debate take place in mini plenaries as per our rules. Mr. Paso, may you please take us through this before members can take a bite on these issues? Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. There is currently a rotational system that is followed in respect of debates. Whether it's subject for discussions or draft resolutions. And these are debated in many plenaries, largely. I must say, though, that it becomes a little complicated when it comes to a draft resolution, because many plenaries do not take decisions. So what has happened previously, the debate would happen in the mini plenary and the decision was taken later in the House. That has happened. So to come back to the point, so there's a rotational system. And the concern from the smaller parties is that they never get to the point where their subjects are debated in the House. And this is the grouping that they follow. So if you have group one, it will start with the first party in that group one. And then you have group two. And the same applies to questions. The same applies to statements. They are grouped similarly. So our recommendation is that let us create more opportunities for mini plenaries to sit or for mini plenaries to take place. And you can then have, for instance, let's say you have a mini plenary today at 2. You have 2 mini plenaries at a time, so you have one slot at 2 o'clock until, say, 3:30, and you have another set of mini plenaries from 4 o'clock till 6 o'clock. Alternately, you could have 3 at a go. I think the rule says no more than 3 mini plenaries. So you can have 3 happening at the same time through the virtual platform. And then you have another three happening at 4 o'clock. So you would have debated six issues on that day. So that is what we are recommending at the moment. That is the only way, at least at this point, that we see from the administration as an intervention to assist and address the concern raised by the smaller parties. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kaso. Honourable members, is there anyone with a different view from what is being proposed here? Let's take a bite, honourable members. Honourable Mazzoni.
Honourable Deputy Chief Whip, I'd like to say that we agree with the proposal. The more debates that we have, the better. I think that there's been far too many motions that have been left under the line for far too long. The mini plenaries are working well, and I think, as I said, the more opportunity we have to debate items in Parliament, the better. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mazzoni. Abanye Sebakatel, you no longer want to say anything. Okay. In you agree?
Chairperson.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. Honourable Lozi.
Yes, Chair, I'm sorry, man. I have this trouble with... Yes, Chair.
Yes.
Chairperson, am I audible?
Yes, you are. The platform is yours, Honorable Ndlozi.
Okay, so... Sorry, yeah. No, that's fine. I'm... we're fine with the agreement. It seems to me that there is a... From what I can read here is that we consider a creation for debate in Zealand. I don't know how will then the administration go and work on a rule, or is this just a matter of programming? I'd like also to clarify that. And then secondly, it seems to me that if we're going to be doing plenaries, we may end up with a situation where the plenary discussions are, or debates that are referred to plenary, are those of smaller parties only, from what I can see here. So I want to understand, because that will defeat the purpose. It will be like marginalizing them. So I want to understand clearly between these groups that you have done on the larger house, or when you work out the rule or the mechanism, when the entire house is sitting, these smaller parties still have their opportunity, or the opportunity for the rest of the house to hear a topic that they would have moved, or will it result in that situation in which only mini plenaries and only a decision is taken to the bigger house? I think there has to be an articulation. I'm sorry if I'm taking everyone, but I don't think I have a clear picture of what will happen once we allow this mechanism. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi. Don't apologize. You ask a very relevant question. Thank you. Mr. Kassel?
Thank you, ma'am. Yeah, no, I thank you, Mr. Ndlozi, for the point that you've raised. Was it assists us in terms of clarifying the process. There has been an approach taken in the sixth parliament that subject for discussions should generally happen in mini plenaries. So those are the forums we used for debating budget votes. Still a sitting of the House, but in a smaller version. So That applies to all parties, not just to smaller parties. But we have listed these smaller parties groups just to clarify the point that these are the parties that have raised concerns about their perceived marginalization when it comes to debating their subject for discussion. Now, how do these debates come about? Those motions that members give, when we give notices of motion, they then become the subjects of these debates. Or alternatively, a party can submit their motion in writing. So this applies to all parties. Now, debates that have not gone to mini plenaries are your SNAP debates, like debates on matters of public importance. Those have been dealt with in the main plenary. So that has been the approach. And I think so far parties have understood that approach and they've cooperated. So no party has really insisted that their debate, their subject for discussion or their motion must be debated in the main plenary. And the idea really was to create an efficient system of dealing with these debates, because you had a long list of motions of members where they stand up in the House and say the next sitting of the House must debate this, but they were never debated. So the mini plenaries are the mechanism to ensure that you are able to deal with these motions raised by members. So the answer really is that this approach is applicable to all parties, not just to the smaller parties. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Paso, for clarifying that. We really appreciate it. Honorable members, can we now move on to item number 8? This item 8 was not really referred to us by the speaker, but it's an item which was sent to us to the committee by Honorable Hill Lewis. So can you please take us through this, Honorable Hill Lewis?
Thank you very much, Honorable Lakuda. It's a pleasure to see all of you again, colleagues. Chair, if you remember in the main Rules Committee, Honorable Singh raised this very strongly and mentioned that it had actually been consistently raised in Rules Committee meetings since 2017. And I spoke in very strong support of Honorable Singh in that meeting and asked that we do refer it to the rules, to this subcommittee. That's why when I saw the agenda, I was surprised that it had not been referred, and that's why I asked that it be added. But you know, Chair, at the end of last year, once again, there were several hundred questions that went unanswered. Many of the questions that were answered took many months to answer, so far in excess of the 10 business days allowed in the rules. Our concern around this has been growing also as to the quality of the responses received. Sometimes the quality received, frankly, makes a mockery of parliamentary oversight and accountability. And so I really do think that this is a subject matter, a topic that the Rules Subcommittee does need to start seriously applying its mind to for amendments to the rules, to beef up Parliament's ability to hold the executive to account with written questions. And I will say that I wrote to the Speaker at length about this last year, and I provided a number of examples, and I'm happy to table that correspondence if the Speaker agrees that it can be tabled. The Speaker correctly replied and said that Parliament is doing everything it can, and the Speaker's office is doing everything it can in terms of the current rules. So I then wrote to the President about it, and I received a response from Mr. Kurnoff, and I'm also happy with his permission as well to table all of that correspondence. And the President said basically we have to take it up with Parliament because ministers account to Parliament. So I think both the both the president and the speaker have basically put the ball in our court as the rules committee and said, we need to run with this ball now and come up with proper proposals for rules amendments to address the issue of unanswered and badly answered questions. So I don't come to the committee with any firm proposals, although I have lots of proposals. I'm wanting to put this on the agenda to say this is something that we need to deal with. And perhaps my only proposal would be...
Honorable Hill-Lewis, I wanted you just to explain to us why you brought this matter to the committee. I think you should stop there, right there. I didn't want honorable members to just say, Mr. Paso. Mr. Paso?
Ma'am, I'm happy to assist, to advise on how perhaps this matter could be dealt with once the chair has concluded her remarks.
Okay, thank you very much. I didn't want honorable members to say, let's just acknowledge this submission by Honorable Hill-Lewis to the subcommittee, and also that we refer this matter to the speaker to place it for discussions in the rules committee. So we acknowledge receipt of your presentation, and also we appreciate that you brought this matter up. But I want to propose to this subcommittee that we take this matter back to the speaker to place it for discussion, for further discussion, because there was a mechanism in place which lapsed in the fifth parliament. So we really need to take it back to the speaker to place it for discussion as this subcommittee, so that when we discuss it and come up with proposals, we will all be ready to come with proposals on how to deal with this after looking back at the mechanism that was there. Honorable Janji, before I give to Honorable to Mr. Kassel.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair. I hope Honorable Trasso does not have ambitions of being honorable member to be a problem. I want to agree with you, Chair. I want to support you in response to Mr. Lewis's presentation that let's agree and have this matter as a matter on the agenda in our next Rules Committee. It's probably that rules committee where we're going to be giving reports from this subcommittee. But I don't want to assume, Chair, because it seems that we might be at different levels of understanding exactly what the problem is. And so when it goes to the rules committee, I would want us to be much clearer about, firstly, unpacking that problem in order to enable us to come with the proper solutions to it. And one of the ways of doing that, some of you might be aware and know, we need to know when we discuss it in the Rules Committee. How many questions have not been answered? From what period? In other words, what's the life of this not answered question? Who are these ministers who have not answered these questions? What are the reasons they have given for them not abiding by the 10-day period? And even to get from the deputy president as a leader of government office a presentation as to what kind of actions did that office take once it identified that there was this defect in the answering of questions, what did they do? Once we get that diagnosis and understand that problem, it will be, because the Rules Committee will be able to then take a decision. Because when you bring it to the subcommittee, we're here dealing with technical issues where we need to change a rule. So if there's a certain thing to be changed, which I don't think there is, that will happen. But the Rules Committee can take a decision based on what is presented in front of it. I think, as for Mr. Lewis, as much as we're discussing this, I don't know, Mr. Lewis, if you follow cricket, but I don't want you to be a spokesperson for the speaker, because the speaker wrote a letter referring matters to us, and this was not one of those issues she listed. But if you follow cricket, there's something called the leg before wicket, an LBW decision, that when that ball pitches outside of that line, whether it hit the leg, that decision is ignored. And I think you've just done exactly that in terms of bringing this matter here, because we must attend to matters that are coming with the signature of the speaker, and he lists those matters. But I still, nothing is lost, because we can go to the Rules Committee and discuss that matter. All I'm asking is that when we get to that point, let's have the details of these questions not being answered. It's not even a name and shame. This is about accountability. We must know who is not doing their work in responding to issues raised by members of parliament, regardless of what party they come from. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Tanji. Honourable Kuranov, before I go to Mr. Kaso.
Thank you, Deputy Chief Whip. I support exactly what Honourable Janji has just said, because what he's referring to is to Rule 146, Sub 3. So I rest my case and I support your decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kuranov. Mr. Klaas?
Ma'am, mine was just to say we will do our best to assist the Rules Committee so that the Rules Committee does not have to rehash this matter. This issue was dealt with by this subcommittee, but in the Fifth Parliament. The subcommittee, in its wisdom, made recommendations to the Rules Committee in terms of giving effect to Rule 136.1, which speaks to a mechanism to deal with unanswered questions. The Rules Committee discussed the matter, took a decision to establish the mechanism. It was even published in the ATC. But that matter lapsed because it was not concluded by the Fifth Parliament. So we will assist the Rules Committee with that. We may not need to reinvent the wheels. That is, if this Parliament still agrees with that approach that was taken, so that the mechanism is put in place and this thing of answered questions is dealt with once and for all. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Kaso, and thanks, honorable members, for deliberating on this item. Indeed, we want all executive members to be held accountable. So not answering questions is not an option for them. They must respond to whatever questions that are posed to them. Thank you very much, honorable members. We have come to this matter will be referred back to the speaker to be placed on the agenda of the Rules Committee. We are now moving on to the last item on the agenda of this subcommittee, which is the brief. Mr. Kaso.
My apologies. I'm sorry. I raised my
hand. It's okay.
I just wanted to say, just for the sake of the minute taker, that on the issues that have been discussed as we close, where there was a differing views, we'll state those in the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I noted, if I'm incorrect, you may correct me, because I don't want us to do this outside of the meeting. When you
address
the issue of the Deputy President's question, it seemed to us that the DA's view was not necessarily the same as the rest of the what the other parties were saying, and we'll just reflect that in a minute. So we just wanted to make that point, that we will reflect the views that have been expressed here. Yeah.
Okay. And also on the time for declaration of votes, the views of the EFF must be reflected as such. Thank you very much, Mr. Kaso. Let me take this opportunity to thank all members of this subcommittee for your participation in this meeting and also to appreciate your valuable inputs, because as Parliament, we really need to make it work, and it's up to us to do what is expected of us. And also when making our inputs, I really appreciate, honourable members, that in this committee we don't have those tendencies of undermining or insulting one another. We raise issues based on what is before us and also as adults. Thank you very much for doing so. And also, let me take this opportunity to thank Mr. Paso and the NA staff table for always being available to assist us as parliamentarians when doing our work. Your advice is always appreciated. Honourable members, without wasting more time, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much. Until our next meeting, honourable members, which will be communicated to all of us. Thank you very much, and also to our support staff, CMIPA, thank you very much for always being there. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.